You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name is Pat Davila. With me is my co-host, Dan Fry.
How's it going, Pat?
Excellent, excellent. It's been a couple weeks. We're here. We're back.
Yep. Getting somewhat into a regular schedule, right?
We hope so. Lots of good things happening, you know, in the Myth TV world.
Yes. Yes, it are.
I got my new setup all done. It's pretty much basically done. I got my main tuner working. Everything's working really well. I got my my channel changing script working pretty well. I previously, my old setup, I use Myth Changer, which was written by the Ubuntu dev. What's his name? The idiot guy. What's his name?
The idiot guy?
Major Idiot. That's who it was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he had a script written. I used that, and for the most part, that worked okay. But I had noticed some issues with channels over 1,000. If I had gone to the same channel, if I recorded back-to-back show recordings on a cable channel above 1,000, occasionally it would puke, and the changer would go to like one of those audio channels. It was a real weird bug, and it was hard to like really pin it down where the problem was. So this time around, I went...
I had the same issue with the FireWire changer when I was using that as well.
Right, right.
I couldn't get anything above 1,000 to work.
That's what I'm using. I'm using FireWire, okay? But it worked okay if you just went to that one channel once. It was only when you went to it a second time, you know, back-to-back, that's when it would sometimes happen. So this time around, when I did my installed, I decided to use... A program called 6200CH, which is part of one of the official channel changers. And it was a little different in that it was a C program that you had to download and compile. And once it's compiled, it's fine. There was a couple flags if you were going over 1,000. And I used the flags, and now everything works really well. I can record, you know, no problems using the FireWire back-to-back on channels above 1,000, no problems whatsoever. So that's become my main channel changer, and it works great, and I'm happy. A couple other issues. One thing I've never really used before, but I used it when I did this migration from the old setup to the new setup, was they have Myth Archives. Are you familiar with Myth Archives?
Oh, yeah. Just used it this past weekend, actually.
Yeah. What you do is you go in, you go into the Myth Archive menu entry, and you say, okay, I want to archive this show, and you basically tell it where to save it to. And basically what the script does is it'll move that recording, it'll create a folder in whatever directory you tell it to put it in, and what it'll do is it'll put the recording in there, it'll put the XML data file that contains all the metadata about the program, and it puts it to wherever you want. So I wound up doing that for a bunch of my recordings that, you know, high-def stuff that I want to keep around. You know, it takes as long as your throughput is to move a file that large. It was pretty quick on my home network, you know, going to my NAS. And I did, I don't know, maybe 8 or so high-def shows. And everything moved over okay. But one thing I noticed, though, it did not keep my commercials flags for them. In other words, I brought it over, and it, you know, when I imported the archive into the new setup, it showed that there were commercial flags for it, but when I played it, it would not recognize them. So all I had to do was I don't know why, but I reflagged the shows that I had in there, and once I did that, everything works okay, and then, you know, everything commercial flagging for those recordings are fine. So that's a handy utility.
So Let me ask you this, okay? I use Myth Archive to archive off DVDs to for people. Like, for instance, like just this past week, my brother was selected as a one of the legends of football for my high school. You know, he he's out of college. He teaches at a local school. He's a football coach at the local school. So they brought him on, and they were interviewing him and a bunch of other people from my high school from all the way back through like the 40s and 50s. Okay, so I took this recording. I flagged all the commercials, and I just archive it off to a DVD. That's typically what I use Myth Archive for. I've never used it in that manner.
This is native Myth Archives. In other words, there's an entry in it from native Myth Archives. Export and import. Yeah. And when you do an export, you basically point it to one of your recordings, and it'll move it all out to whatever location you tell it to move it to. Now you
can you add processing to it, like since it does have commercials, can you have it say cut all the commercials and then move it over like you can with the DVD?
I didn't see anything in there for that. It seemed to be you just take the whole recording and dump it into a directory, and then once you get your new setup up and running, you basically import it back in.
Okay. So you have to do an explicit import and export every time you want to get it. It's not something that would be in like another menu on like your watch menu, correct?
No. Once you import it in, it shows up as just a regular recording. Now the only thing.
Oh, okay.
It just looks like another it seems you look at the recordings and it's there in all these shows.
Okay.
Once you import it in, and the only thing that was a little different was when I did the export. There were a couple of recordings where the channel did not exist on my channel lineup anymore. For instance, HGNet, I had a couple of recordings that from a couple of years ago that I had on there, and that channel got removed by our cable provider. So I had to tell when I did the archive to give it a different channel identifier. So I just picked another arbitrary channel to put in there.
And right, it's kind of like what you do with the Miro bridge, where it creates like channel 999. In your guide, and there's no recording data associated with it.
This thing kept all the recording information.
To associate with.
The only thing it updated when I did that was just the channel that you recorded it from.
Okay.
It just updated that one field. So.
Gotcha.
And it creates like an XML file that has all the metadata in it. So when you do the import, it'll pick. Yeah, it'll pick up the file, it'll put it to your recordings directory, and everything's in there. And the only extra thing I had to do was rerun my my commercial flagging for a couple of them. Because some of them are on movie channels that have them set as no commercial flagging. You know, the movie channels, you don't need to do that.
Yep, anything I record off of HBO, I pretty much set that
way. Yeah, right. Any of those movie channels, you just say, there's a flag when you go into MythWeb, where it has the channel tables and all that. There's a little box that you can check off that says, commercial flagging. Or no commercial thing.
Auto and just disable it.
Yeah, you don't need to do that. It's just processing if you leave that on. So, but other than that, everything's working well. I'm really happy with the setup so far. My main hard drive that I have the OS is an SSD, so that comes up really fast. This time around, I actually got I have a new video card, so I actually got HDMI audio working perfectly. So I don't need to turn on an external tuner box or anything receiver.
It's pretty straightforward now to get that in a few releases back. At least the way with Mythbuntu was that it didn't recognize the HDMI audio on it. I believe you needed to have. Let me see. There was an Intel sound driver that you needed to load that to get Awesome Mixer to get it to. Be recognized as a recording device. Now, for a while there, I think in like 10.04, it would show that it was there, but it never actually showed any actual inputs or outputs that you could assign anything to. It would just say that there's a recording here if you hit F6, or there's a device here if you hit F6, it would show you the HDA something or another in there. Now I believe that's all kind of been fleshed out, and it just works. Which card did you get by the way?
I got an NVIDIA 430. I think it's
NVIDIA 430.
Yeah, I think it's PNY. I think I got. So, it's pretty nice. I had a video on there on my MythBox on my archives that I have is the guys from the Blender Foundation that did Big Buck Bunny. Mm-hmm. The last video that they created was Syntel. And the file that I downloaded was an XFID file that was in 4K, I think it is, or 2K, I forget. And on my old MIS system, I could not play that back. Like, I could see the video, and it was fairly smooth, but the audio was all garbled and whatnot, and it was and you couldn't understand any of it. But with this, it's nice and smooth. You know, it's much faster. I got a quad core now, so it's, you know, it's much faster. It's smooth. It sounds perfect. So it can handle, you know, it can handle the more intensive files and formats. So
That's not bad. I'm looking at it right now out on Amazon, and it's, what, did you pay about $70 for it?
Which one, the card? The video card?
Yeah, PNY GT430, Gigabyte DDR3, DVI VGA HDMI 2.0 PCI Express graphics card.
Yeah, I paid about $70. That sounds about right. So, you don't have to spend a ton for it.
That looks like a nice card.
Yeah, it's a sweet
spot. No, not for HD TV, yep. What about the fan on there? Do you notice that at all?
The CPU fan is, well, the video card fan is quiet, but my CPU fan.
No, the video card fan.
That's it's not quiet at all. It's fairly quiet, but it's noisy is my CPU fan. I think I'm going to replace that at some point to get something a little quieter. Like down here, it's no big deal because I have a fish tank right next to my TV and I can hear the pump going all the time. So, you know, I got to raise the volume enough so that I don't hear the pump. So it doesn't faze me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm one for quiet. I have anytime I build one, I make sure to do a silent power supply. I replace the stock CPU fan with a Zalman fan that's really quiet.
Yeah, that's probably I'm gonna wind up doing is get some kind of replacement fan that's a little quieter. You know, at some point, it's not a big deal right now.
They're like $30 even. Look at Newegg. They're like $30 for those Zalman, you know, big fin fans that go around there. They call them what, like flower? There's something like flower petal design or something like that, where they just have these big oversized fins, and they have a heat sink that kind of surrounds them, and they just run at a slower speed, and you can't hear them at all. They're really great, and they're cheap. They're like $30.
Yeah, the only thing you got to watch out for is how big the heatsink is. I know with some of them, they're really large, those heatsinks. And if you got a small case...
Depending upon the case, yep.
Yeah, you might be a little tight, so you got to be careful about that. So what's really exciting that we talked about previously in the last episode, we talked about the Silicon Dust HD Home Run Prime tuner, external tuner. And that's supposed to ship tomorrow. Yep. We're recording on July 24th, Sunday night, and tomorrow morning is the 25th, and it's supposed to ship. Now, that's the 3-tuner model. Now, they also have a 6-tuner model that's like $500. Apparently, they didn't have enough stock to fill all their pre-orders on that thing, and some people got them shipped to them this past week, but some people, they got their pre-order pushed back to August. So it sounds like they didn't have enough of a run on that model. So we'll see what happens with the 3-tuner model that we both have on pre-order.
Yep. I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to that coming in. I'm actually going to rebuild my whole setup as well. I haven't had a chance to do it since the last time that we met here. But I'm going to be doing much the same, you know, like you were. With the solid state drive, I've had that sitting here for quite some time. I've just been kind of holding off on the rebuilding piece of it. I will be rebuilding all that hopefully by the next time with this new tuner in place as well. I'm going to pull the other tuner that I have out in there as well as the P50 or the P1 PVR 150. I'm going to retire that thing and just have everything come off of these two tuners now, which will be the PVR 1212 and the new Silicon Dust Prime.
Yep, that's going to be my exact setup. So I pulled my old 150 card when I went to all high def, the last build I did a couple of years ago, and
I left it in because I had an SD box, and I knew for a lot of the stuff that I record for my kids, it only gets broadcast in SD, so I didn't have a problem with that. Now I'm not going to have any issue with just moving this to all HD now, even though it's not going to record some of this stuff in HD.
Yeah, that's okay. That's fine. It's no big deal. But regarding the cable cards, apparently there is an FCC mandate that says to the cable companies from the government that says as of August 1st, they have to allow self-installs for cable cards.
Right.
And if you go on to the HD Home Run forum, specifically in the HD Home Run Prime subcategory there, people talking about this, and it sounds like people have started contacting their cable providers and asking about this. And sure enough, it sounds like a bunch of them are gearing up for this. They have their, you know, either a FAQ or a special website set up where you can do a self registration / setup for them. And basically, what happens when you get a cable card is it's a unique identifier to the cable company. And what they do is they have to pair it to whatever device you have it sitting in. And it used to be that they would force you, you know, to have a guy come over and do the setup, and they would charge you sometimes, depending on the cable company.
Oh, yeah.
$20, $30, $40, just for the guy to plug the stupid thing and read off the numbers back to the person on the phone.
Bullshit, if you ask me.
No, absolutely. It's complete nonsense. So, sounds like they're getting their act together, and that's a good thing. And soon as I get the thing, and August 1st rolls around. August 1st sounds like when that's when, you know, everybody's going to go crazy with this. So, hopefully the thing ships on time.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out in the next day or two if that's the case.
Yes, I'm looking for. I'm actually going to go check my Newegg status out there right now.
It hasn't changed. It's still pre-order. maybe by midnight it'll change. So, also on the HD Home Run forum, people talking about what's the setup going to be like for MIT-TV, and we spoke to Nick last time from Silicon Dust, and it sounds like the setup is going to be actually easier than, you know, what we've had to deal with the regular HD Home Run QAM tuner. It sounds like, you know, you just plug the
device. Well, no scanning. We don't need to do any scanning at all.
That was the biggest pain in the ass with QAM tuners. You know, so you got to plug the thing in, you got to turn it on, you got to do a scan and get a bunch of frequencies, then you got to sit there and resolve them manually. Don't have to do that. Just plug it in. You tell, okay, for this device, I want to use the scheduled direct lineup. Boom, done. So we'll see how it goes. We'll go through the process ourselves.
Yep. Looking forward to that.
We'll write down our notes and document any curves that come along through. Hopefully, it goes smoothly. We'll see.
Now, do you have any issue now? I mean, I personally am going to want to have the first, you know, because it's going to be able to do three recordings at one time. I want to have the first tuner inside of that Prime box be my primary device for just watching television, right?
Yeah,
you don't do a whole lot of live TV.
Yeah, I don't.
But I want, because I'm going to have, you know, these three tuners and then the HD, I'm sorry, the PVR 1212 in there, and I really want that one to kind of be like the fallback one now. I don't need that one to be running all the time. I don't need to worry about, oh, is it going to change channels or not? You know, because I have just a little IR blaster as well, and I know if my kids start messing around and get near it or whatever, they're going to knock the thing out of alignment, and it may not change the channel correctly and whatnot because of how it's positioned in my entertainment center, blah, 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 all that crap. But my thinking behind this is set this one up first instead of having to go through and mess with any of the levels after the fact to say, hey, prefer this input or that input or anything like that, because I was kind of doing that for a while there. I kind of feel like I'm not going to have to do that anymore with the Prime. And if I can get these three tuners to be set up as the first tuners inside this thing, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, previously with the old HD Home Run, I set it up as the primary recorder. And what I did was I had created a separate schedules direct lineup. Because with our cable company, there was only so many channels, basically the over-the-air channels that were unencrypted, so it would only work with a handful of channels. So I did a separate lineup for that, and that worked fine. So whenever I did a scheduling and I wanted to record network stuff, you know, I created a sub-range of channels that didn't exist with these channels for the HD Home Run, and that worked perfectly. And it was also the primary, and anytime if I wanted to watch something live, we'd go to that, which was almost never. Now, the other problem with this is that there's channels that are going to be encrypted on the cable company that are, you know, not copy freely, such as the HBOs, the Cinemax, Showtimes, whatever. It's the movie channels, and there may be, you know, other channels too, depending on your cable provider and what level of protection they have on it. So,
right.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to keep the PVR 1212 as the primary tuner, because I record, you know, I wanted to not worry about it. So
yeah.
I know that anything off of there is going to record fine, and even if it's just, you know, the flags are on there set, it won't make a difference.
Right. Now this is kind of my thought behind a lot of that too. Is inside it's a real easy to do this inside MythWeb, and what I would previously do is if I knew that there were channels that I was never going to record, like there were a lot of, like, you know, other language channels that I don't speak these languages that they just have in the package, I would go into MythWeb for the different lineups that I had created. So I would have one, let's say, for the PVR 1212, or there may be channels that I just don't get. Like, for instance, I don't get Showtime, so there's no point in it being in there and having it match some recording that I have set up. Like, sometimes a movie and a TV show may have the same name, but it would try to record something on, like, say, like Showtime, which I don't get. You know, but it's fine for when it's trying to record the television. Say, in good cases, this is the TV show Parenthood and the movie Parenthood. I would always get, like, these bogus recordings from a premium channel, play this movie for a premium channel that I didn't get. So what I would do is, for that particular tuner, I would go in and into MythWeb, and I wouldn't delete the channel. I would just say, you can go in and what's the name of it? You can
you can go to Schedules Direct. Okay, you log into Schedules Direct, and they have a web interface that shows your channel lineup. You can go in there and check off boxes for channels that you don't get. And you won't pull down that guide information into Myth TV.
Right.
So if you don't care about Showtime, you won't see Showtime on your guide information, and you won't be pulling down programming info for the channels.
I didn't change Schedules Direct. I just left Schedules Direct to be what it is, because they're periodically going to add things and remove things, and I didn't want to mess with that all that much. But if you go into, let's see, I'm in MythWeb right now. I'm on the TV tab and the channel info. And if you scroll over, like the very first column is delete. You can actually delete the channel out of there if you don't want it there. But then there's a visible column. It's the second to the last column, and you can just say don't make it visible. So once it runs its schedule or the Mythfill database that night, it will never try to record a channel that's not marked visible. So you can actually go through in there and hide it. Like, I've got, because I have so many freaking tuners running here at one time, I see at least five different ones, and it just goes by its source ID. And I know what they are because you can look at the back-end status tab as well and see which ones that they are. You can then go in and say for instance, just hide a bunch of channels. So, like, I have the one tuner in there that was just a cam capture card. It was like the 1250, I think it was. But there were certain channels that it either had like two or three assignments on it because it was just pulling down the cam information for the frequencies that it had, and they would line up, say, three ABCs, for instance. I don't need three ABCs listed in there for one tuner. So I would just go in, mark two of them as not being visible, and then anytime I looked at my guide, I would only ever see that one ABC there and not the other two. It's a good way to go in and kind of customize what can come up on your guide, especially when you're scrolling through, you know, with the remote control on the TV itself.
Well, that's a different approach to take.
Yeah, it works. It works really well. I mean, because like I said, I had, you know, I would just set up a different, you know, Schedules Direct lineup, even though I was using the same lineup that was out there on Schedules Direct. I would set up a different one locally and tie that to each one of my source, you know, my tuner cards. And this was a way to kind of customize some of that stuff so that I didn't see, like, a lot of these duplicates or all those music channels that just come across as static on the cam cards. I didn't want to see any of those things, so I just would go in and disable them. Or I should just say mark them as invisible inside of MythWeb.
Right. Well,
the nice thing about this too was is that a across all of my tuner cards, they all shared the same number. The reason why this works out, because if it decides to start recording something on tuner one, and when you go to watch, say, live TV and you're on tuner two, you may want to type in, you know, 1006 for ABC, you know, and if I start tape, you know, changing that around to say like 906 or 806 or something like that, if my wife goes and sits down, she's like, "Where's ABC? Why can't I get to ABC?" She'd have to know to go to switch to a different channel. I didn't want to have to make her do that.
Yeah, well, see, I don't have that issue because I don't do it for live TV. That sounds like a habit of a TiVo person. Sounds like.
Yeah. You got her there.
So I've never owned the TiVo, so I don't have those habits. So, and I'm also hoping that, you know, the vast majority of the channels that are on there, we're able to record all of them. The only ones that hopefully are just the premium movie channels.
Yeah.
But
it would be nice if at some point that you don't need to tie this to a Schedules Direct, you know, lineup for the Prime, because it is passing all of that information, I believe, over the, I guess not, I guess it's probably only passing just the channel itself, nothing more about the channel, like what's recording at this, or what's playing at this particular time, or any of that over-the-air guide type information. But I'll have to see. I just don't know at this point if that's the case.
We'll find out very soon, Dan.
Yeah, yep.
Hopefully it's not too bad. We'll see. What else you got? You were saying you were in the market for a new TV?
Yes. Yes, I've been looking. I think I'm going to, in about middle of the month, next month, I think that's when I'm going to buy it. I've been looking at a plasma. I know you just bought a plasma not too long ago.
No, actually, I got an LCD.
I thought you got a. I thought you bought a plasma for one of the.
No, I was looking at the plasmas, and it was one of the ones I was, you know, comparing with. But I wound up getting an LCD. Mm-hmm.
Well, I actually saw a Panasonic plasma in Best Buy the one day, and for one, I'm not going to buy it at Best Buy. They wanted to charge me like I don't know, it was like $1,700-$1,800 for the thing. And actually, it would have been on sale then for like $14.
How big are you going, man?
$14.99, something like that.
What are you going for, like a 56 or something?
No, that was a 55-inch model. It was a Panasonic plasma. So I then decided to start looking at the specs and all that. I started doing all that stuff online. It was a nice picture. It has 3D. I don't need 3D. You know, I don't have a Blu-ray player that supports 3D or anything like that. So, from what I understand, you know, at some point every TV is going to have 3D in it. It's just going to be another checkbox, like, on the list. It's not going to be something that you're going to, I'm going to go out and buy this TV because it has 3D. But I started looking at it. I mean, the screen, you know, looking at the screen, it looked really nice. I know it's not always the easiest thing to do inside of like a big box store like that. But from what I can tell, the reviews on the unit are very nice. I've actually found the 50-inch model, which I think might work a little better in my entertainment center that I built down here. Which I don't mind it being just that 5 inches smaller. I still think 50 inches is going to be, you know, plenty big enough.
Yeah,
for
the
it.
One I got down I in found the man, that one. The one in the man cave is 51, and that's pretty big.
Okay, this one was I found it for like $857 on Amazon the one day. You know, I have the Amazon Prime, so it would have been like free shipping. You know, I mean, all it, no tax. I mean, this is I think the way that I'm going to go with this thing. The one nice thing about buying it from Best Buy is that for anything you buy over $1,000, they will take away your existing set. Now, I have a 55-inch DLP TV, so it weighs about 90 pounds. Really not. It doesn't weigh that. You know, that doesn't weigh all that much, but this thing is big and bulky. You know, I still need at least two people, you know, will still take two of us to get the thing up the steps and out, but I can't fit it into my car to take it anywhere. You know, I gotta see if I can get my dad to come with his van over, because he's a plumber. He's got a big van that he uses to take to the job sites and stuff like that. You know, if I can get it into his, you know, into his truck and take it somewhere. And then I don't even know where I could go. I can't just dump it. I'd have to probably take it to a dump somewhere. I'm calling, you know, a local service shop to see if they want it for parts, and I'll give it to them. There's nothing that I'm going to do with a blown bulb, you know, or a blown DLP TV here. I'm not putting another $300 into this thing.
It blew up again?
Yeah, it blew up like 8 months ago, so it's just kind of been sitting here.
So you got a 300-pound paperweight, basically.
Exactly. So I want to get rid of this thing. I want to replace it with something. And this Panasonic was a really nice looking one. I like a lot of the Vizio stuff. I'm thinking the plasma. I mean, in the basement down here, I have one window, and it's at the opposite end of the room, and it's covered over by my deck, basically. So it doesn't, you know, put a whole lot of light inside here. I'm thinking plasma is probably going to be a decent way to go. They're Energy Star compliant now. I mean, things like that. So I'm not going to worry about it, you know, burning up my electric bill or anything like that. But I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking that's the way I'm going to go. I've looked at some of the Vizios, you know, the Vizio ones. I was looking at what else was it? I saw a really nice review today of actually another plasma, but it's from Samsung. It's in their 8000 line.
Now, these new
really
plasmas,
nice.
they're 1080 now, right?
Yes, they're 1080p.
Yeah. For the longest time.
They've got like an insane refresh rate. It's like 620, you know, megahertz refresh rate on the thing. I mean, I mean you're looking at, you know, the LCDs or the LED LCDs, and they're like 120. Some of them are 240. I hear a lot of that's, you know, FUD, you know, on the LCD side, but on the plasma side, I think it's a little bit more important.
The power consumption issue. You know, you get the tree hugger saying, oh, the plasmas eat up too much electricity. We talked about this months ago, and I linked to some studies, and it's negligible. It's not that much more.
Yeah, right. So I'm thinking that's going to be the way to go. If I can get a 50-inch screen delivered for nothing, you know, no tax for $850, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I think I'm gonna, you know, go with that one. The nice thing about it too is, it has the 3D stuff and whatnot in it, but it's got a lot of like their connected apps, like their internet. So I have a Netflix account, I have Amazon, you know, like I said, I have Amazon Prime, which gives you a lot of the streaming as well. So, I mean, I like where some of this is going. I mean, like the Google TV I have in the one room does a lot of the same type of stuff, which is just it's just a box. It's not the actual TV itself. I like what a lot of these online apps are doing. You know, the way that they're getting all connected everywhere. So I'm really digging what the manufacturers are doing. I kind of wish they would kind of settle on like a common interface almost, because you know now you have all these brands that are doing all of these different, you know, app stores that are doing everything a lot differently. I think, you know, people aren't necessarily. I mean, yeah, some people will stick with one brand and stay with that brand and do whatever that brand does, but that's not always the case with everybody. You know, you may have a different room that you want to do the same thing in, but maybe it's something that's not used all that often. You want to put a different model in, a cheaper model in that still has that capability. So I think at some point we may see a convergence on the actual interface itself. You know, maybe it will be something like a Google TV or something like that. That it gives a bit of a more of a common interface.
My Blu-ray player has a bunch of online stuff in there, mm-hmm. and I do use it. Like it's got, you know, it's got Netflix in there, it's got you know, YouTube, it's got Pandora. You know, there's a whole crap load of stuff in there, and it's pretty good.
Yep.
And it seems like they do update it sporadically, Sony.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, you know, they're sitting on it. They've really improved the especially the Netflix. It used to be the only thing that you could do was go in, log in, and you would see your videos in your queue. You couldn't even browse and add remove videos. And they've done updates where you can do all that stuff now. It works fine.
Right.
You know, the Amazon's in there, Hulu Plus if you have it. You know, all that crap's in there. It's nice to have in there. It's good to have options.
It is.
There's even an NHL thing in there that popped up. Where you go to the NHL site and you register and you can watch like old archived hockey games from 20 years ago.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I saw that on the Google TV box, but I haven't had I noticed it after like the hockey season, so I didn't think there was anything to look at.
You know, because I'm a big hockey fan. You can watch the playoffs from like 1990.
Yeah. I have to go back and watch that Flyers-Bruins series where they came back from being down 3 games.
I'm going to go back and watch the Rangers beat the Devils in the semifinals, 94.
Actually, they on the Google TV box, they have The Onion on there. Their video streams are on there. I was watching this one the other day. I had to shut it off because it was so, you know, my kids were around. I couldn't let them hear it, but they were talking about, I don't know if anybody watches The Onion out there or whatever, but they were talking, it was like a panel, like a Sunday morning, you know, discussing politics type panel, but they were talking about people bringing the kids to R-rated movies while they're masturbating in the seats and stuff like, oh my God, it was hilarious.
Yeah, there's some really ridiculous stuff on The Onion. The one I saw was, do video games help your children get ready for the coming zombie apocalypse?
Oh, that's where all that stemmed from. I saw a lot of people talking about the zombie 330 to be one, right? You know, a lot of people talking about the zombie apocalypse, and I didn't know that's where that stemmed from.
Well, you also got the Walking Dead on now. That's a popular show.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's good stuff, and all the summer shows are all started up. All the sci-fi shows like, you know, Warehouse 13, Eureka.
Yeah.
That new show Alphas is on. Breaking Bad is on.
Yeah, it's not bad. I've been digging that.
Breaking Bad started up. True Blood's going. So there's some good shows on.
Yep.
I'm enjoying them.
I'm digging that Alphas right now. I think that's, hopefully it's got some legs.
Yeah.
Isn't the new Battlestar Galactica supposed to start up sometime soon as well?
I think.
The prequel?
I think in the fall.
I should say the I don't know what you're going to call this, because Caprica was a prequel, but this is kind of in between the prequel and the...
Well, it's the Cylon War. That's what we want to see, is the Cylon War.
Yeah, right. But is it still a prequel? I guess it is.
Technically, it's a prequel, yeah.
Yeah.
What else? Falling Skies on TNT. I've been watching that. That's that. No,
I've been wanting to get to that, and I just keep forgetting to set the thing to record.
Well, you can watch the old episodes. It's only been like 3-4 episodes. You can watch, okay, if you go to on demand, they have them there, so you can catch up. You can catch up there. It's on Sunday nights at 10 o'clock. That show is on Falling Skies,
okay,
and it's Noah Wiley and Moon Bloodgood.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the two main characters. I forget the other guy's name who plays the military guy. And it's pretty good. It's Steven Spielberg production, and it's not bad. I've been liking it so far, so.
Right.
I'll keep watching it, and they already got renewed for a second season. So, my curse of watching shows getting canceled seems to have been lifted. My Grim Reaper of TV shows has been lifted. I know.
I have that same problem with restaurants.
Yeah, it seems like every show that I watched and I start recording and following gets canceled that season.
Yeah.
But it seems to turn around a little bit, so it's a good thing.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah. You've been going to restaurants and they get closed down, right?
Well, I found that I can no longer say that this restaurant is my favorite restaurant, because as soon as I do that, it takes about 2 months and then the restaurant closes. So.
Well, restaurant business is a tough business, man.
Yep,
a lot of places don't survive very long, and they're gone within a year.
Nope. So I've decided I'm never saying that, oh, this is my favorite restaurant anymore. And I honestly, we go out to, when we get a chance to, we go to so many different places and varying places. We don't go back to a lot of places all that often, unless it's something we really, really like, and we will go back. But I will not say it's my favorite restaurant, because I know it'll kill it.
So what do you think about Netflix jacking up the prices?
Not happy about it. I think I'm going to switch it to a streaming only, one for right now, because like I said, I have a Netflix disc that I've been sitting on here for, I don't know, it's probably like a good 2-3 months that I got to just finish, going through it so I can get it back and get the next one to come. But I'm just going to shut that off. You know, there's no point in having that come through, since most of what I do is on streaming. I can usually find something to watch on the streaming side of it. Even though it's not necessarily, maybe it's not everything that I want to watch that's out there, but I can actually jump back and forth between the Amazon on demand and the Netflix, and kind of see everything that I want to see. Amazon On Demand's got a lot more newer stuff out there than Netflix does. Netflix is great for a lot of these series and whatnot, and definitely a lot of older movies. My wife and I, we actually been watching America, The Story of Us. It was like a History Channel thing. I don't normally, you know, look at a lot of documentaries or anything like that, but this was, pretty interesting. It was like 12 episodes. I think we're on like number 8 or 9 or something like that of it, and it takes you all the way from the time that they kind of, settled Jamestown all the way up to, right now where they just built the Statue of Liberty and they're, erecting New York going upward. So it's really, really something what the whole thing is. Stuff that I haven't looked at since I've been, in like grade school and middle school and whatnot, high school. As for the price increase though, I don't know. I think it's a little premature. It's a little early.
Yeah,
for that,
they're trying to drive people away from the disc because this business is clearly not as profitable for them.
Exactly. They need to open up the entire library. I know that they're fighting the MPAA for a lot of this stuff, to be able to have like the streaming rights versus just the distribution rights, stuff like that. But honestly, once you have that better channel in place, I think that's the time to say, okay, we'll shut off the discs now, or give you the option to say just do discs or just do streaming, something like that.
Yeah,
I don't think it should be a either or. I think there's still complementary services. Like they even have, prior to this, they had one service where you could stream. I don't know what it was like. It was very limited amount that you could stream per month. Kind of like getting one disc out at a time or two discs at a time. You could have a limited streaming account as well, on top of your disc account. So I don't know. I still think it's a little premature. I hope it doesn't come back to kind of bite them in the ass. I think things like moving into like 43 new countries is definitely a boost for them. I think that's going to be very interesting when it comes time for the Olympics to kind of renew their contract. I think they're renewed with NBC up through like 2019 or 2018, something like that. I think right there you look at somebody like Netflix who has this worldwide streaming network. Something like that would be great, for them to pick up. They're already going to be doing original programming that I'm hoping is going to be available for streaming. Who knows? I mean, if you only have the disc version, the disc one, and it's only available on streaming, how are you going to get to see this new show that's coming? I think it's like a Kevin Spacey show that they bought out compared to HBO or Cinemax or something, or HBO or Showtime or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I know when Netflix went into Canada, they don't even offer the disc option. They're just 100% streaming.
Do they have the same... Does the MPAA have the same rules and regulations there that
I don't think so.
Here?
It's completely different.
Yeah, see, that's the problem.
Country.
Yeah.
So who knows what their catalog is like. I would imagine it's completely different because it would have to negotiate, rights from the owners in every country mm-hmm. that they plan to show this stuff.
So how soon is it before we're proxying to, say, England or somewhere in Africa or something like that to connect back to our Netflix accounts to stream anything we want to here?
Yeah, it's a little silly. But, I still want the disc option for certain things. I don't watch a lot of disc stuff, but once in a while there's a movie I do want to watch on Blu-ray. I watched the Tron movie, the new Tron movie, and it looked great. Mm-hmm. I loved watching it in Blu-ray.
Yeah.
High def. It looked fantastic. And, not for nothing, they don't have all the movies on streaming.
Right.
And they're not the highest quality. Even their HD stuff is not 1080. I think it's like 720. I mean, it looks good, but it's not as nice as the Blu-ray player, But yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards just going to streaming and just renting whatever oddball movie I want to see on Blu-ray from the local video store or one of those red boxes. Because we got those red boxes all over the place. They're in the local supermarkets. You can go in and rent.
That's going to be the only option you have, honestly, because I just saw that Blockbuster's closing down another 200 or 400 stores, across the country. So, I mean, I had... I think two of them that were around me already closed. I'm assuming the next, you know, the other one here on the not too far from me is on the list as well. Your box, those red boxes, and actually Blockbuster has some boxes like that are around. I don't know if you've seen them at all or not.
Don't they do streaming service as well? I know they
do. I mean, the Droid X that I used to have had it built into it, but you needed to have a membership, and my membership has long expired from Blockbuster, and I didn't know of a way really to, you know, I didn't want to go in and set up a whole nother one just to kind of stream only to my phone, because I would rather have been able to, if I was going to do that, yeah, the phone is nice, but I would definitely want to have it available on a TV
yeah.
as well.
Yep. Sounds like they're behind a curveball, and
yeah.
it's hurt them. They're going down, you know, too little too late. But I have a local, there is a local video channel over here that's got a few locations, 48-hour video. Mm-hmm. And they do have Blu-rays in there now, too. So that's probably going to wind up doing. I'll go with Redbox. I'll go with the local video store if there's like an oddball Blu-ray title I want to watch. And I'll just
yeah.
be mostly streaming. You know, they're forcing our hands, so that's where I'm going to go. Gonna drop the discs, and that kicks in, I believe, in September. So you got another month until those prices go up.
Yeah, I'm gonna switch mine over. I think probably sometime next month as well, just to get it over and done with. I know a lot of people are vying for the other route because of the fact that they don't have everything available to stream, you know, right now. They're gonna for the short term, go with the disc option and. You know, wait for the streaming. You know, till they can get more of the titles available on streaming. Might be better for us. We might notice more. You know, less lag and whatnot on the streams and stuff like that. If you ever notice that, I personally never noticed that. But hey, it may end up working out for us who are deciding to stick with the streaming for right now.
You got Amazon Prime, Dan. Have you checked out some of those Amazon Prime videos?
Yeah, I watch movies on there, you know, all the time. You know, and my wife, she sometimes works, you know, has to, you know, be up early and goes to bed early. So I'll just throw on something on either Netflix or Amazon on demand. We were watching this one television show and for some reason it recorded with no sound one time, so it was like, let me see where I can get this at, and I just happened to look on the Amazon on demand, and it was there like a few weeks like a few days later that we could just go ahead and watch it, you know, right from there. So I mean, it works out, you know, it works really well. I've been digging the service.
Yeah, they have some series that are on there that are not on Netflix, but I think overall mm-hmm. the titles are much less than what they have on Netflix.
Oh, it is. It is a much smaller library at this point. If anybody were to kind of pick up, you know, the pieces of something like a Blockbuster, maybe, you know, it would be somebody like them who could take in all of the streaming content, or all of the content deals, I should say, and be able to stream a lot more of that stuff. That would be great, I think. You know, I think either one of them, honestly, Netflix or Blockbuster. I mean, Netflix or Amazon would be able to, kind of, you know, pick up. I think they're. I don't know if they, I know they filed for Chapter 11 not too long ago. Blockbuster did. I don't know if that's, you know, going to mean the end of all of their box stores or anything like that. But certainly seems to be the way that it's going.
Yeah, I have that too, and I've been watching it. And the quality, I've actually rented some stuff off the Amazon streaming, and it's quite good.
Yep, me too.
The quality's good.
Yep, I've been thinking. Actually, one of the best things was I was watching a movie. I get 3 days later or whatever, they send me an email saying, "Hey, we noticed you had problems watching this particular movie," and they refunded me my money, and I was like, okay, I didn't remember anything. I didn't have to like reboot the Google TV or anything like that, or I don't recall there being an issue. And you know, but if they said that there was an issue, you know, I mean, great. You know, I mean, they refunded me the money, and they did it without me doing anything. You know, they came to me and said, hey, this was a problem. Here's your money back.
Yeah, I've gotten those from Netflix.
I think it's great too that I could actually script it so that I could, you know, launch, say, like, you know, Google Chrome, and fire up Amazon Video on Demand right from my Myth TV. We could just make a little menu item for that. Have it open Chrome and open up to the Amazon On Demand. It remembers who you are, so it'll just sign you right in, and you can watch it right on Linux. You know, I mean, it works really, really well. I've done that as well. Not the scripting it part, but I've watched it from, say, my laptop, and I've had no issues with it. I think Netflix needs to kind of get on board with that, so that we can do that, and hopefully once they get their HTML5 stuff worked out, you know, that won't be an issue anymore.
Yeah, they need to lose the friggin' Silverlight crap.
Mm-hmm. How nice would it be to be able to, you know, manage your queue right from inside, say, something like Myth TV? Kind of like how you do it either from, like, an Xbox 360 or a PlayStation 3 or a Nintendo Wii or the Google TV. I mean, all of these things have that capability. Hell, the Google TV is a Linux box. I mean, the capability is there. We just need to have them open it up to the rest of us. And we've been saying that for, you know, how many episodes now? Probably every single one at some point.
Yeah, we're still waiting for that.
Yeah.
Still waiting for it. It'll come sooner or later.
Yeah, it'll have to.
I think I'm done. Do you have anything else?
Yeah, I think that's everything. I do want to mention, you and I are both on Google Plus now. If anybody wants to hit us up on Google Plus, let us know that you're a Myth TV, you know, cast, you know, fan, and want to add you to my appropriate, you know, Myth TV circle, so
yeah,
that
we
I
have
can
to do that.
You know, keep you up to date on anything that we may be doing. Like, I posted out here tonight that we're recording to the people following, you know, those particular, you know, in that group of mine. I put a link on the site as well for an Amazon. It'll help us out if anybody wants to buy anything from Amazon. Just click on the link on our site first if you want to. It helps just, you know, cover costs for, like, the servers and stuff like that. No big deal. It just passes you right through. You don't have to do anything special with it. And other than that, I don't think I have anything else, Pat.
Yeah, I think you're gonna definitely hear the next couple episodes how this whole cable card and HD Home Run Prime setup goes.
Oh yeah, it should be interesting. What do you say? The first is when they do it. So the first is
like a week away.
What, next Monday? So it'll probably be the 6th before I can get over to the RCN, because I can go over on a Saturday for that, and I can go over and get it. So I'm probably a few weeks out yet. But as soon as that box gets in and I can get the cable card, and maybe I'll work from home one day and just head over there or something.
Yeah, work from home.
Yeah.
I hear you.
There we go.
Yeah, so we don't know when the next episode's coming out, but it'll be within a week or two.
And Yeah.
Yeah, and then the HD Home Run, the whole cable card stuff will definitely be at the forefront of the discussion. So everybody, thanks for listening. And we'll talk to you real soon. Take care.
See you later.
It's hard to leave my loved one. I think We'll laugh and sing and dance together into the morning light and night. We'll never let you go. So won't you leave me alone and crying side by side. We walk into the light. Kiss me just like honey.